West Lou. I am your host, Louis Cifrone. I'll repeat it. Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Cifrone. Thank you for joining me again tonight. It's been another wild and crazy week in the world. Many things happening. Not necessarily many good things. A lot of bad things are going on out there. So we're going to talk about them a little bit. If you wish to call in and join me tonight, the number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. The number is on the screen in front of you. I'm happy to hear from you. Okay, here we go. A new report came out this week. There's reports for everything, but this had to do with food, hunger, a new report on hunger. And the report said that 49 million people in this country, 49 million people are dealing with food insecurity. I love it. We always come up with fancy terms for bad things. If you're hungry and you don't have enough food, it's now called food insecurity. And the article suggested, and properly so, that there is a silent epidemic of hunger going on in the United States. I repeat, a silent epidemic of hunger. People don't talk about it. The media doesn't really talk about it. Nobody talks about it. It's just there. You know, we got these 50 million people who don't have enough food to eat. By the way, of the 49 million, 16 million are children, okay? Now, interestingly, they don't have enough money to buy food, these people. At the same time, the cost of food, you and I know, the prices keep going up. And all our bills today keep going up. Nothing goes down. Nothing remains the same when it comes to having to spend money to pay for something, whether it's food, gas and electric, water, gasoline, etc. Okay. And on the other hand, because you need money to pay for things to get along, income and job finding, income and jobs have remained stagnant in this country since 2008. That is 6 years. Six years, yes. Since the recession that the banks foisted upon us with this mortgage thing, income and jobs have remained stagnant while the cost of food and everything else is going up. In 1854, the famous philosopher, writer, whatever way you want to describe him, Henry Thoreau said, and I quote, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation." And this is true. The mass of people, a good bunch of people in this country today, are leading lives of quiet desperation. This cannot go on. It cannot be permitted. Things have to change. We're going down in this country. We're not going up, not just with food and the cost of food and everything. We're just going down, period, in our relations with other countries and how we our political leaders conduct themselves. Nothing's going up except the income of corporate leaders and bank presidents. They're making money. They're making big money, and they're in ascendancy every day. That's the 1%. Whereas the 99% aren't getting anywhere. I want to talk about something now. Some people may find what I'm going to discuss in the next few minutes offensive. I apologize if they do, but listen to what I am saying, because what I am saying is correct, and we have to understand these things. I'm going to start slowly. I'm going to talk about the Farm Bill. You know the Farm Bill. I talked about it in December, January, February. In depth, it comes out every 5 years. It's a new law, and it's got a lot of pork in it. I mean, farmers raise pigs, some of them. The Farm Bill for the last 30 years, 40 years, has been filled with pig stuff, gluttony, whatever you want to call it, overreaching, taking advantage. There are pigs out there living and eating off of the Farm Bill who should not be, And I will give you the examples. These are the rich getting richer off of public monies, while other people who need to eat don't have enough money for food and are getting screwed from my perspective. What I am going to talk about, and this is the portion that some people may find offensive, is something called Hallel, H-A-L-A-L. If I mispronounce it, I apologize. Hallel and kosher foods. Hallel are foods that the Muslim people eat. It's the way their foods have to be prepared, what they can eat and what they can't eat. The same as with Jewish people and kosher food. Their foods have to be prepared a certain way, and they can only eat, they can't eat pork, for example. Okay, now, there is a new law, and it's part of the Farm Bill that got signed, I think, back in January by the president. And we didn't hear about it, by the way, till about 2 days ago. And this is another problem in this country. Our legislators in Washington pass these laws, and nobody knows what's in them for 4, 5, 6 months or a year later. This is an example, okay? All right, the law is over 2 feet high. Many, many words. And I have heard people say, even a Supreme Court justice with regard to another law, do you expect me to read that? Well, what do these people get paid for? They get paid to read these laws and know what's in it. Well, in the Farm Bill, okay, it said that if there's another in any emergency situation, like remember Sandy, Hurricane Sandy destroyed a great part of New Jersey and parts of New York City, for example, in any emergency situation, there must be a pre-preparation to take care of Muslims and Jews who only eat certain foods pursuant to the Quran and the Torah, okay? And these foods must be stocked in food banks. And you know why the food banks are there. They're for the poor people to go and get food to eat. So that when you have miles and miles of homes and buildings destroyed and people don't have food and water, and because they are Muslim and Jewish and may only eat the challah or kosher foods, they have a place to go to get these foods. And this doesn't make sense to me, I got to tell you right now. It just doesn't seem fair. They say, well, you know, it's their religion. These people are going to starve if we don't feed them. We can't force them to eat that which is against the rules. And this is where I start. Listen to me, number one. That is a crock. That is a crock. Because if you look at the laws affecting challah and kosher, which I took the time to do in preparation for this show, it's interesting what they have to say. There is an exception. Let's start with the Muslims. The Muslims have an exception. It says, if no challah foods are available, it's still necessary to eat. So you eat what you have, even though it isn't, you know, it may be contaminated food. It may have pork and alcohol in it. It wasn't killed the way animals must be killed, with a single slash to the throat of the animal and then leave it hanging to drip the blood from the body. No, you've got to eat. And if you don't have food, you do what is necessary to survive. You eat whatever you have. So it's not against their law to eat whatever food might be provided during an emergency such as the Sandy hurricane. And then we talk about the Jewish people. They can't eat pork. They don't eat shellfish. They don't mix milk and meat. And you say, well, what are they going to do? And it's very simple. There is an exception in their laws also. Don't ever forget the most important thing to the Jewish people from the time of Christ, from before the time of Christ, has been the preservation of human life, okay? And what did they do in the concentration camps during World War II? They didn't eat because they didn't have their food, their kosher food. No, they ate whatever scraps they could find to eat because they wanted to live, and living was most important to them. Okay? People should be happy in an emergency situation to have any kind of food and any kind of water, because people went days in Sandy, in New Jersey, because of Sandy in Jersey and New York City, without food and water except what the government brought in on trucks and planes. And it wasn't consecrated or made the way the Muslim religion and the Jewish religion might dictate. So not how did we get into this this terrible situation where our congressman passed a law saying we're going to do this because we got to take care of these people. This is terrible that they were in that position in New Jersey and parts of New York City where they couldn't get kosher food or Muslim prepared food. Here's how this thing happened. This is a truly interesting story. Two congressmen in New York City. One's name is Crawley, the other Grimm. Crawley's a Democrat. I believe he's an Irishman. Grimm is a Republican. You heard about Grimm today. Grimm is the congressman who was arrested today, surrendered himself this morning to the FBI. He's being charged, I think, with 18 different crimes. Who knows what's going to happen with him? No reflection on this, but I'm trying to bring to your attention who we are talking about and dealing with. And here's how this whole thing came about. A group, a Jewish group in New York City, went to Crawley after Sandy hit New York City and Jersey and said, hey, gee whiz, why do our people who are ultra-conservative and want kosher foods have it denied to them at this time? There has to be a way to take care of them so they don't have to violate their religious rules. Well, it's a crock because they weren't violating their religious rules. The rules say, the Torah and everything else, you preserve life. If you got to eat something else, you eat it. That's the way it is. Okay. But nobody looked into it. Crowley didn't look into it. He thought, geez, this is a good idea probably, and I can satisfy many of my constituents are probably Jewish. He's out of New York City. I can, you know, satisfy my constituents, do a good thing for the Jews, and now if I'm going to do it for them, I can't look like I'm doing it for just one group. So why don't we throw the Muslims in too? I'm assuming this is how this thing came down. So they throw in the Muslims, who probably didn't even ask for this, okay, to make it look politically correct. And along the way, Crowley picks up Grimm to help support him in this thing. Now, it's in the farm bill that special foods have to be set aside in food banks before we even have a disaster, in anticipation of a disaster, and when these people who are in the disaster, or Muslim or Jewish, cannot get their foods, they can go to that bank to get it. Well, the farm bill involves a lot of money. Look what they did in the farm bill. We're going to provide special food for Jewish people and Muslim people who don't need it according to their religion, for political purposes, I assume, we're giving it to them, our government, at the same time that $8 billion in food stamps was cut out of the same farm bill that got signed in January. You heard me. They cut $8 billion in food stamps out, but throw in this little giveaway for people of the Jewish and Muslim faith who probably didn't even ask for this except for a political action group of Jewish people, all right? Interestingly, if you read the reports that have been coming down since January, the $8 billion cut in food stamps amounts to $90 a month per family. Doesn't sound like a lot of money, but if you have no money, that's a fortune. And it has overloaded the food banks because the people, they don't have enough money. They don't have enough in food stamps to go to the supermarkets to buy the food they need, so they go to the food banks to get the food. So more and more people than normal, more people than before, have been going to the food banks. So now the food banks are running out of food. There's a burden on the food banks. But at the same time, though, we've got on the shelf the special foods for those of the Muslim and Jewish faiths. Again, it doesn't make sense to me. At the same time, what else has happened over here in the Farm Bill? For years, the Farm Bill has been a screw job for the American public. There was a time, this bill got passed under Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s, when farmers needed help. Nobody had money to buy their farm products. So we started paying farmers then not to grow product, not to grow anything. And this continued over the years. And each year, more and more farmers are paid by our government not to grow anything. We're going to give you $100,000. We don't want you to grow any corn this year. Isn't that wonderful? They eat, they get the money, and they don't have to work for it. Terrific country, America. Well, this is terrible. This is free money. Now, what galls me, and it should gall you, and I did a television show on this. Many members of Congress, yes, United States senators and members of the House of Representatives, own farms or parts of farms. It's become a business for them. Congressmen own farms and parts of farms, and they get subsidies for not growing certain foods. Isn't that wonderful? And they get subsidies based on a law, the Farm Bill, that they passed in Congress themselves. They passed the law to put money in their pockets. Disgraceful. I've talked about this. People don't stay on people. You have to pay attention to what's going on here and how the American public is being screwed. I got to say it that way. Now, because of the uproar over subsidies, that's free money. The government gives you money not to grow things. Now we have something new under this law that was signed in January. It's called farm insurance. It's not called a subsidy anymore. You got to pay a small premium if you're a farmer. And from what I have come to understand from my readings, the farm insurance is a better deal to the farmer or whoever owns a farm and a part of the farm than the subsidies were. It will put more money in their pockets. Let's move on to something else having to do with poverty for a moment. An article came out yesterday written by Daphne Holmes, outstanding article. She wrote about the five signs of poverty being on the rise in America, the five signs that poverty are on the rise in America. First, she said, low social mobility. Makes sense. Low social mobility. People used to work hard to become part of the middle class. We don't have a middle class anymore. And whatever we had went down to a low economic class, okay, because you don't have enough money to buy things. So the middle class is destroyed. There's no upward mobility. If anything, it's stagnated or it's downward, generally downward. And where it's really taken a hit, too, mobility requires an education. We are not properly supporting education for our children. We are taking money away from education. Also, we're not supporting what you might call entrepreneurial endeavors. People, little businessmen, want to start new businesses. People want to go into business because the banks aren't loaning anybody any money since 2008, all right? Not the little people. They loan each other on top the money, but not the little people. How are you going to move up if you haven't got an education and diagonal or money to start a small business? Another thing she says that's an example or sign of poverty on the increase is unemployment and underemployment. The number of employed are going up in this country. He has done it. Obama's done it a little bit at a time, and he's brought unemployment down. I have to give him credit. But the quality of the jobs suck. The guy who is making $20, $30, $40 an hour is now working at McDonald's for minimum wage or $10 an hour. So it's underemployment. He's not making as much money. I don't care how many people work. It's the total amount of dollars involved that count. The quality of jobs are poor, the wages are low, and many people today take these crappy little jobs because they got to make some kind of money to help themselves and their families with no benefits. Then she says there's a stalled recovery. I agree with her 100%, a stalled recovery. The way you measure a recovery, she says, and I absolutely agree with her, is to look at the home building and sales market. Now, let me ask you something. Houses aren't selling that well, all right? Even with you got a ton of them on the market because of the foreclosures, they should be selling. They're supposedly selling at a cheaper price. They aren't selling. And this has been since 2008. It just isn't working. We're not building houses. We're not selling houses. Contractors aren't making money. Suppliers aren't making money. And the primary obstacle, in her opinion, and I agree with her, to a full recovery, full economic recovery in this country is the fact that we are not in the home building construction business as we used to be 10, 20 years ago. Okay, what else? She says we have slow demand. Slow demand. What does that mean? In a healthy economy where everyone's got money and is spending money, you have a robust demand. People want to buy everything and they're spending money. In the United States today, though, because of our economic situation, we have a decreased consumer demand, and slow spending means poverty. People are falling into poverty. They do not have money for major purposes. And if you don't have money for major purposes, you can't buy anything. And the last item, she says, contributes to poverty in America today, or is a sign of the increase in poverty, is economic inequity. Good term. We have it. We hear it all the time. Economic inequity. What does that mean? It means the 1% and the 99%. That it used to be, you know, you had a strong middle class. Everybody's making money. Everybody's eating, educating their kids. Everyone's happy. Now you've got the 1% making all the money and 99% are not making it. That's economic inequity. The numbers are too far apart when they're 1% and 99%. I don't have to tell you that. The scary part of it is, though, that half of our population today is, I'm not saying it's half our population is between 1% and 99%. What I am saying to you, though, is half of our population in this country today lives near the poverty level. They're not in it yet, but they live near the poverty level. I'm talking about, if we have 350,000 people, 350 million people, 175 million people are on the edge of the cliff, almost ready to fall off. They're living near the poverty level. Let's go to the Ukraine for a minute. This Putin's a troublemaker. He's got brass testicles. He's going all out for everything, and why not? No one's stopping him in any fashion. This guy doesn't care. He's going to keep going and going and going. And if he does get stopped, just say, okay, that's enough. I won't do it anymore. And then he'll go back and do it again. That's not what I'm talking about right now. What I want to talk about is if we stand up to Putin more so than we are, who is going to stand with us? Well, the Great Britain, the United Kingdom, their defense secretary, Philip Hammond, said this week that he told his military chiefs, his Army, Navy, and Air Force people in England, that they would not be sending troops to the Ukraine if Russia keeps doing what they're doing. We are not sending our people, our soldiers, our military to the Ukraine, even, he said, if Russia formally invades the Ukraine. Okay. Well, and what the people, and he says, because the people of Great Britain don't consider the Ukraine important to them. I have friends in Italy. One of my friends said to me, are you people crazy in the United States? I think she's crazy, though, in this regard. She says, we get 60% of our gas from Russia. How am I going to cook? How am I going to heat my apartment if I don't have the gas from Russia? Selfish interests come into play, and we can't blame people. But this is what's going on. The Euro Union is not going to stand behind the United States. If push comes to shove, we're going to be in there all alone initially. Now, what bothers me, and I've talked about this before, the Ukraine, after Communist Russia, Soviet Russia, broke up in 1989, 1990, 1991, Ukraine had the third most nuclear weapons, warheads, I think they call them nuclear warheads, in the world. It was the United States, Russia, and Ukraine. How they got them all, I don't know, but they had them. And the United States and Russia said to them, look, give them up. We wanted to cut back on everyone having nuclear weapons. The United States was willing to cut back, Russia, Great Britain. But particularly Ukraine, you don't need them. Here's what we're going to do. You give us all your nuclear warheads, which they did. And we promise, they did this in writing, by the way, we promise that we will protect you and provide security to you forever. Here it is how many years later? 15 years later or so? Or 25 years later? And who's helping the Ukraine? Russia, who promised to protect the boundaries and the sovereignty of Ukraine, has already crossed the borders and is in there taking what doesn't belong to them. The United States, we don't want to go to war over this. I don't know what the hell's going to happen, but we're doing what we can. I don't think we're doing enough. I would have killed them with the sanctions day one, because the only way you deal with a bully is to be as hard-ass as he is. And so we screwed. We screwed. We did, Russia, Great Britain. We all screwed little Ukraine. They gave up all these nuclear weapons in exchange for a promise that no one would bother them, their sovereignty would be secure, and it isn't. I'm in support of greater sanctions. I'm not in support of war, but we may end up in a war someday because he's moving. Putin's moving. He's going to try to take over other little former Soviet countries. He's up there in the Arctic that I'm going to talk about in a second. What can I tell you? There's another thing involved here with Great Britain saying, hey, we ain't going to go to war over this thing in the Ukraine. They are on a military cutback to save money, to save tax dollars. They had 120,000 soldiers, okay? And they are trying to cut back to 80,000 by 2020. Putin knows the military is being cut back. He is taking advantage of that. Which brings me again to Putin and Russia. This guy's smart. You know what he's doing? This past month, he went and he drilled oil in the Arctic. Nobody's really drilling oil in the Arctic right now. People stopped drilling 20 years ago. And he took his first supply of oil out of the Arctic. Now, the issue becomes, who owns the Arctic? And he's saying, this is mine, folks. And he brought 10 warships and 4 nuclear-powered icebreakers up there. He has now opened a naval depot someplace in the Arctic with 10 warships and 4 nuclear-powered icebreakers and saying to the world, this is mine, okay? This guy's terrific, okay? Another thing is, too, global warming. The big chunks of ice have melted. There are new waterways to get to Europe, to Asia, new waterways that weren't there before. He wants to control those waterways also, and that's another reason why he is doing this, the melting ice caps. The oil is the most important reason, though. It is estimated that 30% of the world's undeveloped natural gas is in the Arctic, and 15% of the undeveloped oil is in the Arctic. Now, I want to ask you this. Putin is moving fast in the Arctic. He's moving fast with Ukraine. It was announced, and I talked about this last week, that he's made a deal with North Korea so that he can build their pipeline, Russia can build their pipeline across North Korea to get into South Korea. We're on the verge any day of having Russia and China announce that there's going to be a new pipeline going into China from Russia so China can get oil from Russia. This guy ain't waiting for nobody. What's happened to the Keystone Pipeline? It isn't moving in this country. We've been at this for years. We can't get it going. And that's wrong. I know there are environmental problems. That's the way it is in life, folks. The pendulum has swung. We're out of jobs now. We got to worry about taking a few chances to get people back to work. Then when we're successful again, we'll go back and start cleaning up the environment again if anything bad happens. That's the show for the week. I hope you enjoyed it. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. You can get it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. If you like what I talk about on this show, you will enjoy reading the book. If you don't enjoy what I talk about, don't buy the book. It won't do you any good. You won't read it. But if you do like what I talk about, read the book. Buy the book. It's quick reading. It's interesting. I thank you again for joining me. The show is archived. You're going to listen to it during the week. I know it's also on YouTube. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to seeing you next week.